In this episode, we speak with Taylor Brown, the co-founder and COO of Fivetran, a platform that helps customers use their data to power everything from AI applications and ML models to predictive analytics and operational workloads. In 2012, Fivetran was founded by Taylor Brown and George Frazier. The two participated in startup accelerator Y Combinator in 2013. By responding to the needs of customers, Brown and Frazier found their product market fit in 2014 and continued to grow from there. Today, thousands of global brands, including Autodesk, Condé Nast, JetBlue, and Morgan Stanley, trust Fivetran to move their most valuable data assets to fuel analytics, drive operational efficiencies, and power innovation. I'm your host, RJ Lumba. We hope you enjoy the show. If you like the episode, click to follow.
RJ Lumba is the executive chairman of Market Insight Media and the managing partner of GrowthCap. He is the host of Great Entrepreneurs, a podcast for driven entrepreneurs and business owners. Our podcast covers all topics related to the entrepreneurial journey, from ideation to execution to optimization and to reaping the rewards of a well-run business. In the minutes ahead, we'll share with you unique insights and tactics from some of today's most accomplished and inspiring entrepreneurs.
Taylor, great to see you. Thanks for coming on the show.
Likewise, RJ. Thanks for having me on.
I thought I'd start off at your phrase on LinkedIn, which says, helping good humans build great products and amazing careers. Tell me about the phrase good humans. What do you mean by that?
It's a good question. I'm not exactly sure where I picked this up, but it's like, ultimately, at the end of the day, I think the builders of business are humans. I have a belief that you should surround yourself by the best possible people you can, not only in terms of their ability and their skills, but in terms of like just their general nature. And if you surround yourself by like assholes, then it sort of just makes life terrible. If you surround yourself by really, you know, I'd call it good humans, which are just generally good people, who also have this like inclination to perform and inclination to drive and succeed, it creates this environment where you can go build an amazing company of whatever sort.
I picked up on it and I love it because it's something that we've actually been focusing on in terms of our media, and actually posed this question to other leaders about the concept of character, integrity, and how that actually feeds in well into building a business. You know, it's often thought trust is like the most powerful aspect that you could build as part of your business. It compounds into various aspects. Don't want to spend too much time there, but love that we touched on it. Tell us about your background. I think there's a really interesting history to you and your co-founder, and then moving into Fivetran.
Yeah, so I'm going to go back slightly further because, you know, I saw that you went to Cornell. And when I was looking at schools, my top choice was Cornell for architecture, you know, and I'd always wanted to be an architect, and Frank Lloyd Wright was sort of my hero as like a growing up child. And I think right when I got to around college phase, I realized like the challenge with architecture is limited. It felt limited as a profession. And it felt like I would be working for 15 or 20 years designing stairwells before I got anywhere. And then I decided to like, you know, jump over and do liberal arts and focus on learning. And that, you know, sort of led me on a roundabout path to California. And I, you know, joined a startup company with another Amherst person and, you know, just sort of fell in love with technology. And the things that have sort of stayed constant in my life are just competition, working with, you know, people and collaborating, building things. And those three things just sort of like continued to like manifest in different ways. And so once I kind of got this bug, I was the first person at a smaller startup that was building applications for Facebook back in 2010. George, who has a PhD in neuroscience and undergrad in cognitive or computer science from Carnegie Mellon, you can tell he's sort of the technical brains of the operation. He is a longtime family friend. We have known each other, we sort of say, for 3 to 4 generations, because each of our families have owned or sort of built some cabins in the northern Wisconsin woods back in, you know, the 1920s. And they've just stayed in our family for that entire time. And so like I've known his parents, his grandparents. You know, we laugh because my great grandparents gave his grandparents for their wedding gift like a big lead frog that was like a paperweight, which I guess is the thing to give back in the 1920s, 30s. We have that as a, it was like our mascot here now, which is kind of cool. But eventually he left academia, joined a biotech startup company around the same time I did in San Francisco. He decided actually to leave his company and he wanted to start a company and had an idea. And the idea was originally MATLAB in the cloud. And so he and I decided to join forces. It was a good combination of technical and sort of design slash potentially sales at that point. And we applied to Y Combinator and we got in and, you know, I guess that it took us a while to actually get to where we are now, but that's kind of the like longer background of how we got to where we are.
I see that design is woven into your background professionally. How do you think about design? How does it play into what you do today? You could apply the term very broadly and say design is in everything, but how do you think about applying and integrating design?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, after college, I decided I really wanted to do industrial design. I took a bunch of industrial design classes, and I also like did a part of a master's program in design. And it was like design thinking, which is more like taking design principles towards business thinking. And so at the end of the day, there's sort of the visual design pieces, like how does it look? How does it feel like? What does the brand feel like? And that's very important. It's become even more important as we've grown in size. I think the design thinking is actually very helpful when you're smaller, which is like taking a structural way of thinking about something, a more holistic path of like looking at, you know, users all the way through their journey and just then applying like the right practices for how do I solve this problem for them and then that sort of thing. And so I think early on that probably shaped the way in which we built the product, especially when we were very, very small. You know, oddly, when we went to Y Combinator, the thing they really liked, the formula was a technical founder and a design founder, because those two did quite well overall. So like other examples of this would be like Airbnb. I think that was one of the things that helped us get into YC. And I do think it's helped us throughout the life of the company.
And how has it played into, I mean, your role as COO and maybe thinking about the organization, the culture? I mean, that's everything, right? How the organization works within itself and how it interacts with the outside world is started with kind of design thinking. So yeah. Tell us about building the organization. You know, what's your intention behind how you scale and organize?
It's a really good question. Like, it's changed over time, but I think when we got to YC, and I remember George and I thought like, wow, we're hot stuff now. Like we're going to take this company public in like 3 or 4 years and we're going to be like huge or whatever. And then the reality set in and it was like, oh my gosh, this is super hard. There's like a ton of work that we have to do to actually get this thing off the ground. And we spent, you know, 2 years sort of iterating. And I think one of our investors called us the cockroach because they were like, you guys just don't die. Like most people just give up after half a year and just like, you know, go back to their day jobs. But you all just like continue on. And I think the beginning was all about just how do we get off the ground and how do we make this into a, you know, into a viable business. Once we started to get product market fit, I think when we thought about the future, it was really like, hey, we really want to build an independent company. We want to take the company public. We want to make a multi-generational company. In order to do all of those things, like multi-generational, especially, it's all about like one, having a good initial product, but then two, having an amazing culture, right? Because it's like the people that are going to be there for the next generation have to have been here through many, many years. And so we've really tried to grow and invested a lot of stock in growing the individuals within the organization. And we have people who have been here, you know, we started a sabbatical program this year for people who've been here 5+ years. And it's like crazy number of people that now can go on sabbatical. And we have plenty of people who've been here 7, 8 years. And it's just, you know, it's pretty awesome to see, you know, even our first two hires are still here. And I think that just shows like, you know, we're committed to the team and the team's committed to the vision. And when you have both of those together, you can build something that's much more lasting, I think. And we joke that like in 10 or 20 years, we look back and say like, what was the best time that we've had over the last 10, 20, 30 years? It's not going to be like, oh, we won that deal or we built this feature or this product. Probably it's going to be like, we did this with these amazing people and we accomplished all these things together as a team. I think that's the thing, like the humans or those moments with our humans are the things that we're going to remember the most.
You know, as I hear you speak, there's some wisdom and maturity in the way you approach company building, relationships, just thinking about the humans, as you say. Where do you think that comes from? This isn't the characteristic of every entrepreneur or every leader that I talk to. I mean, maybe they're thinking in the background, but it's not in the forefront. Where do you think you really started to focus in, or was that always part of how you grew up? Was it part of other things you did along the way? Just really curious about this focus.
I've just always liked people. And I think that what I found, and also I think George has a slightly different perspective on this, but one similar, which is like, you know, when you have great people that you're surrounding with that you end up having a lot of success with and they work really hard, you build this loyalty to them as well. And it's like, I think some combination, like he has his own reasons and I have mine. I think I'm not exactly sure where it came from. I will say that throughout my life, I've played a lot of sports, and a lot of the sports that I've played, I've ended up kind of surrounding yourself by this amazing team. And you may not always be like friends, but you know, you build this kind of camaraderie. And the best teams I've been on are the ones where you have like a lot of humans that respect each other and they trust each other. And that combination, again, works very well. What I will say is that, like, just because we surround ourselves with ideally good humans doesn't mean that we're not still driving very hard. And I think a lot of people think like, oh, if you hire good humans, that means they're just nice humans, which means they're not able to give critical feedback, or they're not able to like call their, you know, teammates out or their colleagues out when they're not doing something well. The reality is, it's even harder to be able to be like, I'm someone that's a good human, I'm respectful, and people like working with me. And at the same time, I'm going to push the people around me, right? Like, I'm not necessarily going to be nice. And so it's like adding in the performance culture piece to that is like also quite hard to keep it from going cutthroat, from keeping it from becoming like overly competitive, I guess. And so that's like a weird balance that, you know, we've continued to just keep amping up, because we, as we scale the organization, performance becomes even more important, obviously. But mm-hmm. keeping that culture is like really critical. So, you know, it's a balance that we're trying to strike right now.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to touch on the business. You know, we're like halfway through this conversation and we haven't talked about Fivetran that much. So tell us about, you know, what the company does and the clients it serves.
Absolutely. So Fivetran is a platform for data movement. We help over 6,000 customers globally, you know, various different sizes, to move data for a few different reasons. You know, for their own analytics, they're asking questions of their company, and we provide the infrastructure to move data for them into a like a centralized location. They then use it, again, like for asking questions of the business. They use it for building applications that are revenue generating. And then, you know, finally, they're building a lot of AI and ML on top of the data that we move. And we have brands that go all the way down to like 5 or 10 person companies, all the way up to like, you know, JetBlue or Morgan Stanley or Snowflake. So it's a technology that essentially is viable for almost anyone at any size who needs to work with data, which at this point, I would say is almost every organization across the planet. And yeah, that's basically what we do.
And what's different in the way you do it versus others? It seems like it could be a fairly ubiquitous thing. Like, we help move all your data into one place that's more accessible and ways that you can analyze it in a more efficient way. You know, so like, what's the differentiating factors?
Yeah, so I would say our mission is to make access to data as simple and reliable as electricity. And like, why electricity? It's like, if you look at, you know, when electricity first came into the house, back when Thomas Edison was doing this in like the early 1900s, I think initially it was designed for the purpose of light, like let's bring light to the house. But as soon as there was actual an infrastructure where there's just power into the house, all of a sudden there's like explosion of additional innovation on top of that. Mm. And, you know, so you got hair dryers and washing machines and vacuums and, you know, all that stuff, now all the way to cars and all that other stuff. And so like, what has come before, and what a lot of the way a lot of our competitors do this, is that they essentially give some sort of toolkit to the customer to say, hey, build your own power into the house. And people build very specific power lines that are for very specific use cases. And so we built a more general purpose and automated product for moving data for customers. And the sort of the timing was right with a lot of the cloud data warehouse innovation that has been happening around like Snowflake and BigQuery and Databricks. And so we're just fully automated. which what that means is like we have over 500 different sources that you can pull data out of with that, like a matter of clicks. We manage every piece of it all the way through, just as your power company manages making sure that there's power in the outlet in your wall. Like that's how we think about it. And I think that's what's made us very different from everyone that's come before and all the competitors that we have today.
Super helpful. I like to talk a little bit more about the entrepreneurial journey and how you think you've changed along the way, because I think you learn stuff about yourself at each phase of the company building process, and you're always working on getting better on different aspects. What are you currently working on now in order to become an even better entrepreneur?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would say throughout the business, like there's, I call them stepwise changes that happen where things break, right? So the very first one was when it was just like George and myself initially building, and we got our first few customers, and then we realized like, oh man, we have to build like an actual team around this, right? So that's first break. You're like, okay, so then you start hiring people, and there's a whole journey of like, you're still like running the business, but you're hiring people, and we each just, you know, we're managing 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 people directly. And it's kind of like crazy. And then you hit the second stepwise function, which is like, oh, we need managers. And so you start promoting or hiring managers. And then at some point, everything breaks. At each stepwise function, there's like, you have to think about what leadership you have and see what the processes and what the systems are and how the business is run. And so then the next one is like, oh, well, we need like, you know, leaders that actually, that have a lot more experience. We need to hire VPs now. And then you kind of hit that stepwise function. And then we were like, now we need C-level folks. And we got to that stepwise function. This last year, I think we hit a function where we had some C-level folks, but we didn't quite have the folks, and they were amazing, and they've been with us a long time. We didn't quite have all the folks that had seen the scale that we're, you know, growing to, right? So they hadn't done the 300 million to a billion or 300 million to 2 billion path. And so you kind of hit like a bunch of walls where people are just sort of learning on the job. And the challenge with that is that there's a lot of execution risk. There's a lot of strategy risk. And so this last year, we changed out a lot of leadership. We rebuilt the, you know, a lot of the strategies for the organization. And that was our level up. This year is all about execution. And, you know, I think for me, what I've noticed is every one of those step ups, I hire someone who's better at doing whatever it is that they're going to do than myself. So when we hired our first VP of sales, like this person has done this multiple times. They know what they're doing. I don't know what I'm doing, but I've been doing sales for a while. And then I spent a lot of time learning and learning and learning. And at some point I realized like we get to the same point where we're about the same level of expertise. And then it's like, great, we probably need somebody else who then I can continue to learn from. And so that's part of it, is just continuing the learning journey and hiring people around us that can help me continue to learn. The sort of second piece is just then, how do we think about the team? How do we think about management? And how do I get myself untangled from a lot of the lower level folks who I've had relationships with for many years who are like, hey, Taylor, I'm upset about this thing. And it's like, hey, I know you're upset. And like, I can't like, you know, parachute in here and help you with this. And so some of that is my own learning and like, how do I actually use hierarchy, which feels uncomfortable at times, but I think is valuable to make sure I'm not going around the chain of command and undercutting the leaders below me and undercutting their autonomy and power and agency within the organization. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
And have you always been adept at detecting like when it's time to move someone into a different position, or adapt at understanding how to interact with different people, like depending on what motivates them or, you know, how they should be communicated to? It's kind of like this, you know, leadership question of like, how do you best motivate a very kind of diverse set of people, diversity in terms of how they think, what they're motivated by?
Well, I mean, I think in terms of like motivating, if you hire the right individuals who are, especially like as you move up higher and higher within the organization, like you hire the right individuals, they should be already heavily motivated. They should be motivated by the cause. They should be motivated by their role. They love what they're doing and their function. And, you know, and so I think I don't spend as much time thinking about how do I motivate the team anymore. I think that was when we were smaller, we really had to like, let's get going, you know? I think what I realized is actually, especially in the last 2 years, is getting people back together brings this connection. This connection brings more purpose within the organization. That more purpose brings more motivation. So me like getting on a Zoom and yelling at everyone like, yeah, let's go. It's like, it's okay. But like a bunch of people coming together and us talking about like the future, what we're doing and how we're going to handle the challenges that we're facing. I think that's much more motivating. People generally want to succeed and we just have to help them with the path towards actually succeeding. One thing I will add that like I will say is challenging is like our ideal is we, you know, hire people that can be with the company for a very long time. And the challenge is when you're growing really fast, the business changes like every 3 months. And so the individuals that can grow and stay at the top of their organization or their function or whatever at that speed have to be able to endure a whole lot of pain and a whole lot of learning in a very short period of time, because they're going to have to like continue to learn, change, adapt, fix, change, adapt. And so that's the one thing that we look for people who can do that. We also recognize that like at some point, you know, folks, they just won't have the experience. And I think the hard part is when the business is typically going very well is a time to actually look and make sure like, hey, are there signs that the next phase is about to become one of those stepwise functions where we need to either bring in a new leader, bring in a coach, bring a leader in over this person or whatever. And we've been late at making changes or making like adaptions because it's like hard to be like, hey, the business is doing really well right now. Let's make a change. You'd be like in, you know, in the NFL, if you think about a college team and you have your, you know, your all-star quarterback and you're like, yes, we're absolutely winning. But next season we're going to the NFL and we're bringing this whole team over. And you're like, okay, well, is this quarterback to be able to handle the speed and the level of play at the NFL? And it's like, probably not. Maybe, probably not though. But you're unwilling at that time to look forward to next season and be like, okay, I need to make a change or I need to bring in someone else above them to help train them or whatever. And so that's the thing that like, I think founders, if they can get really good at that, you know, like I think Ollie Godsey from Databricks is actually extremely good at this. And so I think there's certain people who have gotten very good at it. And that's something that I would, a skill that I would highly suggest for companies or for founders that are growing at very fast rates. Mm-hmm.
What's the best advice that you've ever been given?
Best advice, I think, was probably from Paul Graham back when we went through Y Combinator early on, which was he said, whatever you're building right now is probably not the right thing. And you probably aren't solving the right problems yet, but you need to just run a million miles an hour at it. And you need to just keep talking to customers. And eventually, you know, you're going to change directions and run a million miles of that, change directions. And like, if you just don't ever stop sprinting, eventually you're going to build and do enough stuff that you're going to find the right thing. And that's sort of how we found product market fit. We had to iterate a number of times, but we never stopped sprinting. And I think for a lot of the founders that I talk to, you know, I think that there's a willingness to like, I'm going to try this thing. If it doesn't work, I'm going to quit. And it's like, you can't quit. There's a saying, burn the boats, if you've ever heard it, which is the French king attacked the English king and it didn't have enough of an army. It didn't, you know, whatever, it was over, whatever. And so basically like took a bunch of people over to England, burned the boats. It was like, we're going to win or we're going to die. And I think if you take that mentality with the startup, you eventually will be successful.
Last two questions. One is, can you tell us about a person who has had a profound influence on you?
I was thinking about this earlier. I would say George, my co-founder, is he's probably been the most profound influence in the last 10 years for me by far. And I've just learned a tremendous amount from him.
Last question. Can you tell us about a charity cause or other endeavor that you're passionate about?
Two things I'm passionate about right now. One is just startups and helping founders eventually maybe write a book or something like that. Like I think I just am so deep in it and I love chatting with founders. I love trying to help. And that's sort of this chapter of my life. Outside of that, I still like really designing houses a lot. So I spend a lot of time, you know, my spare time thinking about architecture, oddly. You know, that Frank Lloyd Wright, I guess, never got out of my head. So those are the two that I have right now.
Excellent. Taylor, thank you so much again for taking the time. This has been a great conversation.
RJ, absolutely. This has been fantastic. Appreciate you having me on.